Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hey everybody, I'm Aaron Norris, filling in for Bruce Norris. And this week we've got Michael Quarles. He's a real estate investor that started his investing career as a teenager constructing a duplex. Since then, he has been involved in over 1,000 real estate deals. Michael is a general building contractor as well as a broker, and he's built over 70 units from the ground up. He launched YellowLetters.com back in 2005, which is now the nation's leader in direct marketing service for real estate investors. He also runs the Buy, Sell, Fix, and Flip Academy, which also includes a go-to. You can find him on MichaelQuarles.com. So thank you for joining us, Michael. Again, it's been about a year.
Yeah, it's fun to be back.
Yeah,
I'm honored.
It was so well received a year ago, and especially since so many of the deals now are coming from working directly with sellers, we wanted to loop back around, learn about some trends. So for those of you, for those who hadn't heard last time, can you just give a brief synopsis of how you get started at a teenage level, building of all things, and how you sort of got into the direct mail business?
You know, it was luck at best. I was waiting for my enlist date in the Air Force, and I became bored while waiting, so I picked up the newspaper. There was an R2 lot being advertised by one of the franchise chains, and I had no clue what R2 was. However, I called the agents, the only property I've ever bought out of the MLS. Even as a broker, I don't buy that direction. And I took mechanical drawing in high school. So keep in mind, I was 18, 19. So I was just out of high school for a year. And so I knew how to do stick drawings. And way back in the day, the computer, it was way before computer, we could do everything by hand, take it down to the building department, not knowing what we were doing, and pull a permit, and that's what I did. So I absolutely got involved in real estate, not knowing what I was doing, made horrible, horrible mistakes, and had that big red S on my chest so I could get out of anything I got into. And I fell in love with dirt. As a kid, we play in dirt. You know, a little boy, I played in dirt with my little trucks and stuff. But I, as an adult, I just absolutely fell in love with it. And here I am.
Right. And so when did you sort of make the switch into direct mail? I mean, obviously that was a rough experience, but you kept with it. So,
well, you know, we're always looking for, I don't want to say that next best thing, mm-hmm. but that best thing. Like, how can I get my phone to ring? And I knew that being a broker and a real estate professional, I didn't think it was possible or didn't want to attribute the commission dollar to an advertising dollar, because I knew that if something was on the MLS, I was still having to pay a commission. And because I could already manage the transaction, I attributed that commission to advertising. So I wanted a way to advertise. So I tried everything. I tried newspaper and TV and radio and billboards and all kinds of different ways. And I started playing around with direct mail. And when I say play around, I always like try to do it a lot. And so we did yellow letters before I even knew what a yellow letter was, professional letters, anything and everything that we could do to send to a prospect. Mm-hmm. And I hate saying it, but it's kind of like getting into investing. It was kind of, I was lucky. But then I started magnifying my luck and going, okay, why am I lucky? Why is this working so well? And came to a lot of conclusions, a lot of trial and error. And I think I'm my biggest guinea pig, so I always try something I think of new on myself. If it works, great. I tell everybody else about it. If it doesn't work, I keep the secret. And direct mail works great.
Well, let's talk a little bit about YellowLetters.com. You've had that since about 2005, and you probably get to see a lot. Like, can you give us any idea of sort of the volume that you're doing? Or I mean, I don't know. Are you doing all over the country?
All over the country. And let's say it's in the millions of pieces.
Wow.
We were called, the U.S. Postal Service is going through a change. Most people don't realize it. But we were called by the U.S. Postal Service and asked if we would help them change.
Wow.
Because we were one of the three largest direct mailers in I guess California, for lack of better words.
Wow.
And we didn't even realize we were that big. So that's kind of a cool thing. And we knew we were the largest in our county, but we had no clue. We figured, you know, California is a pretty good state, safe state. But they wanted our help because we milk so much. And
so you're a big stakeholder for them.
You know what? Stamps still cost me the thing.
Oh, so I was going to ask that. Do they give you a deal?
Since you, no,
oh,
they
darn
don't.
Well, no. Good. You're keeping them afloat. We need that. Okay. So, wow. How has it changed over the last decade? I mean, if you came into the business 05, it probably wasn't a strategy a lot of people were using at the time.
It was because no one really understood it from an investor's perspective.
Okay.
There wasn't anybody to ask. So everything we did right, it was like the first time we did it right. And everything we did wrong, it was the first time we did it wrong. So I spent a bucket load of money learning what to do and what absolutely not to do. And in the beginning, we would use services like MetroScan to give us property information from an address perspective. And we'd mail out to everybody that in a geographical area that we wanted to. And we'd call them absentee owners, or we'd call them owner-occupants. But it wasn't until, I think, it like 2008 or so, where we started having some data sets or some data feeds that really allowed us to really magnify and filter our data. So in the old days, well, I'm going to call it really the old days, if I wanted to mail out 1,000 pieces of mail, I couldn't ask it, show me the 1,000 people that have equity and show me those people that have equity for 4 years or greater and that equity base be a percentage or higher or a dollar value or higher. I was just mailing to 1,000 people because that's all I could do. Now I can actually say, show me all of the people that have this data filter of an equity base, a data dollar equity base, a size of house, a year built, length of ownership, how old the owner is. So now I can really refine my prospect group, because I don't want to just mail. I want to mail the highest likelihood of a response, a positive response. And I just don't want call volume. I want that call capture and that call fulfillment that at the end of the day, I want to buy and sell a house. I don't want to talk to people about buying and selling houses. So we really had to magnify and really look at the filters, and that kind of changed for us in 2008. Even to today, I run an algorithm on a new market. So if I'm going to enter, say, your market, I'm going to take the zip codes, and I'm going to, through several data sets, run an algorithm on your market, and I can tell exactly where to market, so which neighborhoods and which zip codes inside of the neighborhood, and what value of property are going to sell for me or are going to be the most likely for me to succeed at. So,
What changed in 2008 that made all that data available? Who's doing that?
CoreLogic. When CoreLogic and First American Title, which for the longest period of time, First American Title was the premier data feed, and they had a MetroScan at the time. And they still have it. But when CoreLogic introduced their algorithms, and that's when about the time you saw some of the national estimate companies for property values created. Well, those are all algorithm-driven. So through algorithms, we can now determine the likelihood of someone having equity based upon recent sales in a neighborhood, based upon length of mortgage, the most likely interest rate at the time that the person borrowed money at, a lot of assumptions, but they're still pretty good algorithms. And based upon those algorithms, we can now ask it to tell us, okay, show me the one that has $100,000 in an equity position, as an example. And it's made our life as an investor a lot stronger, less open to chance, because now we know, which is nice, now I know when the phone rings from direct mail, I know that every person who calls me because they received something from me is, in fact, a potential prospect. They may not be a prospect today, but I know that they can at least sell me a house because they have an equity position. We're, even if we used non-direct mail forms of advertising like bandit signs or TV or radio or some of the or billboards, not every person that calls us can be a customer. They right. may qualify to be a customer because they have a they're motivated. That doesn't mean that we can actually fulfill something for them. And so the direct mail position with the algorithms really help.
Yeah, the data that's starting to become available is pretty interesting, especially with the social media getting into the data business. I was Twitter came out with an algorithm change in the last couple of weeks, and oh, everything is pay now. And I was just curious going into Facebook, because a year ago I went in, I'm like, whoa, when did this happen? You can, you know, mail to people with equity, their political affiliation, their philanthropic intent, and what they like. I was waiting to see if there was a category like, you know, recent death in the family, divorced, you know, so you could market specifically for life events. And it's not there yet, but it's clear that we're almost there, which is a little frightening, but that's a whole nother story. So, I mean, where are we headed in 10 years with direct mail? I've heard that CoreLogic and First American, there's some, it happened at I Survive Real Estate, and I forgot the name of the term, but there's this new layer of data that's going to come in the next 2 years. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't. I have, you know, and I'm not waiting for the next big thing.
Okay.
I'm looking for how I can maximize my market. You know, in my city, I know I have 41,000 houses that I can buy. I can't buy 41,000 houses. Some people can, I guess, but I can't. So I have enough to play with. I need now to figure out, of those 41,000, who are most likely going to sell to me. And that's where I'm getting involved and getting excited, is to use my algorithms and my mechanisms to figure out who that customer is. Because it's not necessarily just now the person with an equity base, although that's an important part of it. I want to know the second layer, the third layer that actually is going to cause them to say yes to my program.
Interesting. So, and that's probably top secret, and you probably don't want to share too much. But what are, if I was completely new to direct marketing, can you share some, there are different kinds of lists. Maybe some of the things that people, that investors you've seen that have been successful in the categories in which they're searching for when they're developing a good list.
Yeah, I think that in the picture of lists, there's a primary group, and in that group there are two groups that fall within it, and then there's a lot of subgroups to those two groups. So the primary group is an equity-based prospect, so someone who has the financial ability to sell you a house. And although equity isn't a component that's 100% required, because someone can bring money into an escrow to close it, most people won't.
Right.
So they won't feed their closing, where some people will, but most won't. So we need an equity position. And the two groups inside of that equity position, the two main ones, are absentee owners. So someone that owns an investment property, and that's either going to be a forced owner, because maybe it was a inherited property or a property that they lived in that either they couldn't sell or they thought it would be a good idea to rent out, or an active investor who actually bought an investment property for passive income, somehow they're an absentee owner. Now, it could also be that it's a secondary residence, but unlikely in from a big picture. The other group are owner-occupants, and those are just folks that live in a house that they own. And so within those two groups, now we have all the subgroups, and those are, you could go for sale by owners, you could go expired listings, which is a term for realtors or real estate professionals. When they take a contract, it expires, so now that property comes off the market. You can have absentee owners, which is one of the main groups, but inside of that one, you could have unlawful detainers, so you could have someone that's evicting a tenant, which is a subgroup, or you can have someone who has a vacancy, so that's a subgroup of an absentee. You could have code violations, which are folks that have been presented with a fix your property or we will situation. You can have divorcees, you can have inherited property, probate properties. There's a whole gamut of subgroups.
Now,
unless we deal with the primary group, the subgroup doesn't matter, because I can't just market to an expired as an investor saying, okay, they wanted to sell their house. Somehow their contract with their real estate professional expired, so they still want to sell, so I'm going to go market to it. Unless I can cross-check it against my equity position list, because if I don't have equity, I can't buy it.
Right.
And so the primary lists are the equity position lists. And if you look at those lists, there's some dynamics that happen where most of us will go, okay, I want a four-year ownership, so I want a prospect that has owned their property 4 years or greater, and I want to have a minimum equity dollar and a minimum equity percentage dollar, and they want a year built I may want square footage. I may want bathrooms, bedrooms, those kinds of things.
It's very interesting that you're talking about that, because I can see when you're testing some of these markets, then do you really test market based on submarkets? Because all these things that we're talking about are so different.
Now, what I learned through this entire process is a prospect that is motivated to sell their house doesn't care that we know that which type of prospect that they are.
Oh,
where
okay.
A prospect who's looking for information about selling their house absolutely cares. So if I just inherited a house and I want to learn how to sell my house, if I receive correspondence from someone that talks about the inherited house situation, that may be intriguing to me because I want information about that. But when I'm ready to sell my house, I don't care who they are. I don't care if they give me information on probate, inherited, divorcee, unlawful detainer, code violation. All I care about is that their advertisement says, I buy houses. And then the key component to that is with cash.
Okay. And so you don't think it's necessary to get in the way of the consumer at the top end of the funnel. So you're not sending a divorcee a postcard that says, got to get rid of your house because you got divorced. You just want them to get you buy houses.
In the old days when we didn't know what we know now, we would have a series of letters based upon your category.
Okay.
The reality is we don't have to. When someone is motivated, they're motivated. So it's like, and I hate using this analogy, but it's a pretty clear one. If you want a checkup from a doctor, you may go and interview and you may find a doctor, you may get references, referrals to find the right doctor for that checkup. But if your arm's broken, you don't care who the doctor is. You're going to go to the first doctor you see, the first emergency room you find, and have your arm fixed. Well, our prospect is a lot like that person with a broken arm. They're, from an investor's perspective, there's, and I hate saying it like this, but there's a lot of procrastination from the prospect's perspective.
Sure.
They've waited too long. They've gotten the broken arm. They need that broken arm fixed. The typical seller, which I'll call that the real estate agent seller, they're interviewing someone for the right of selling their house. So they're not that desperate procrastinator that the investor prospect is.
Right. Okay.
Or that they've had a bad experience with a real estate professional in the past, and they don't look at that arena as a worthy arena to solve their problem.
Okay. Interesting. You know, that saves a lot of time and money. I guess as a marketer, I feel like I'm getting forced into trying to be more and more specific to weed through the clutter in a lot of scenarios. But in this case, as long as you're the go-to person as far as I buy houses and you're there at the right time, you're fulfilling the need. So it doesn't matter which bone is broken, I guess. There's a bone.
there is a difference between knowing or having the prospect know that we know. So and using cluster marketing to market to the prospect.
Okay.
So
let's talk about cluster marketing because we haven't talked about that yet, and it's juicy.
So, you know, if we tell someone that's a code violation, that we know they're a code violation and we can solve your problem, fine. It sounds good for us. For them, if they're motivated, it doesn't matter. But if I send, if we look at cluster marketing for a second, it's the idea of marketing to prospects with different forms of marketing. Because I know that, as an example of myself, I own yellow letters. Mm-hmm. And a yellow letter is a handwritten letter on a notepad, folded twice, put in an invitation envelope, and it looks like a kindergartner wrote it, and sloppy handwriting is better than pretty handwriting, and wad that piece of paper up first and stick it in an envelope is better than a creased piece of paper. So there's a lot of little tricks to it. But if I received that letter, I wouldn't acknowledge it. If my wife received that letter, she would read it. Okay?
Okay.
But if I receive a postcard, I'd have to be highly motivated for a postcard to cause me to reference it. If my wife saw the postcard, she's looking for the discount. She's looking for, you know, both sides of it. But show me a professionally typed letter. One that with a logo and a life signature, and it's talking to me, meaning not necessarily my situation, but it's who I am.
Right. Okay.
I'm going to retain that one. Or give me something that looks like a traffic ticket in the mail or a tax rebate in the mail. I'm opening that thing. I'm ripping it open. I'm having, I'm involved in the presentation. So anytime we can have multiple senses involved in a presentation, the better our response rate's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So cluster marketing is using all of those on the same prospect group. So each month we send out a different piece because one group will acknowledge the postcard, the rest of the group won't. And one group will acknowledge the yellow letter, the rest of the group won't. And what it does is it stops the need for the rule of we have to touch them like 7 or 8 times before they respond to us. No, we don't. We have to touch them with what they will respond to us with or from. So we want to be the person who's marketing to them when they're motivated in a way that causes them to listen to our message and raise their hand and say, I want to call you.
And the average consumer, do they even know that it's you in all those different versions?
No, here's the beauty of it. Without naming national brands, there's a beverage company that has 6 bottled waters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know the last time we looked, water's water, right? It doesn't matter if it's in a square bottle, tall, skinny bottle, short, fat bottle, blue bottle, orange bottle, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's water. So why do they need 6 bottled waters? But when I know they're tooling and manufacturing of 6 different bottled waters, it's costly. It's more costly than if they only manufactured one. Well, they've learned cluster marketing works. Because when I go to the convenience store and I open up the cage of water, I'm not looking at a single brand. I'm looking at 6 opportunities or 6 choices. I'm going to pick the one that I like.
Right. I guess what's very powerful about the combo of creating a good list and that if you create a good targeted list, you're spending less money blanket marketing, hoping people will open and being able to spend that money sending 5 pieces to the same person.
Here's the big part of it.
Okay.
Most investors send the same thing until it bores the prospect to death. So they're sending the same postcard, the same professional letter, the same yellow letter, over and over and over and over again, because that's whoever they're following, that's what they're saying to do. So let's assume for a second you're a prospect.
Okay.
And myself and another investor are marketing to you, and we've been marketing to you for 6 months. They have sent you a professional letter every month, and it says XYZ Investors Incorporated on it, and you receive this thing for 6 months. Have you saved 6 letters or have you saved 1 letter, throwing 5 away? And then I'm marketing to you every month with 6 different individual pieces, not referencing each other. So the consumer doesn't say, oh, it's XYZ Investors Incorporated. It's mom and pop. It's Susie. It's Billy. It's professional Bob. And now I'm keeping all 6. When I make my decision, if nothing else matters, am I choosing between 1 and 7 or 1 and 2?
Hmm.
And I'm going to say, if I have 6 opportunities to grab the attention of the prospect and you only have 1 and we spent the same amount of money,
yeah,
I'll win.
That's very, very true. And it's funny because I'm an absentee owner and I get these mailers. And what's really funny, I've actually called a few of them. I never get called back. And well, I've only gotten 1 mailer.
I hate saying it, but and we're trying to fix it. Each of us that help folks succeed in real estate investing, we try to fix this all the time. There are a lot of phones that are broken.
Yeah, agreed. And there's just some people that I think the letters I'm getting are from a national brand and a system. And it's just interesting to me that it's sort of one and done, which surprised me. But we are out of time for this segment. Luckily, you're staying on for a second segment. But real quick, if they would like to reach out to you, what are the best ways to get in touch with you?
The easiest way to find me is to go to michaelquarles.com, and that's QUARLES.com. And there's contact me there. If you forget that, can't spell it, because I know it's tough to spell. I can't spell it some days. Just go to yellowletters.com, and they can find me as well.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.